Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. A nice balanced episode this week. We have Star Wars Celebration Day, which unfortunately is not a celebration for me. It's more of a criticism because just Disney continues to slaughter everything I care about. John Rahm wins the Masters. Bruins set an NHL record. Odell finally picks his team. NBA news. We had the final day of the NBA regular season wrap up on Sunday. So now we'll make our play-in predictions, my play-in picks, and then take a look at what, if my predictions are right, we'll take a look at what those playoff matchups might look like. Rudy Gobert suspended for the play-in game because he punched Kyle Anderson, or at least tried to punch Kyle Anderson. And Mason Plumlee and Bones Highland got into it on the Clippers as well, which was kind of crazy. So we'll talk about that. Dungeons & Dragons movie I wanted to go see. Really well done film. I'm going to see Air this week. And ideally, I try and get to Super Mario Brothers this week as well, because the Super Mario Brothers like critic score on Rotten Tomatoes isn't great. I think it's somewhere in the 50s, but the audience score is like high 90s. So the people love it, but critics are critics. They can't have fun at movies. If you have fun at movies, that means it's bad. At least that's how it usually goes. But quickly, once again, Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up to Underdog Fantasy using the promo code Animal House, you get a 100% match deposit up to $100. It's quick. It's easy. You can download the app. It'll ask you for a promo code. Just put in Animal House, or you can go to one of our two Instagram pages, Animal House Sports or AnimalHouseUSA.media, and it's AnimalHouse.sports on Instagram as well. Click the link tree. There's a link in there. You can click it. It'll take you to the app. Download it. The promo code will be in for you if you need that. But quick, easy. Would really appreciate it if anyone listening hasn't done it already. You could do that for us. It means a lot. So let's get into, where do we start? Let's start with our pop culture stuff. So I'll talk about Dungeons & Dragons quick. So the Dungeons & Dragons movie, just really well done. Really, really well done film. If you ever played Dungeons & Dragons, or you just at least know about Dungeons & Dragons, it's a fantastical adventure game that you play with your friends. It requires a lot of creativity and imagination. So the fact that they were able to bring all those aspects onto the screen, all the characters, really well done. The dialogue was great. It was witty, funny. The storytelling was just also surprisingly well done. A lot of times you just think it's maybe a dumb action movie, whatever. Not at all. They had everything from like the backstories, strengths and weaknesses, proficiencies and stuff like that, where each character had their own set of traits that made them unique. Really, really good movie. Solid villain at the end. And just, it was a good film. Like, just a classic action, fantasy, adventure movie that was really well done. They hit a lot of great story beats. You know, there was a moment where They use the Chekhov's gun thing. Everyone always refers to that when you're talking about films. Any baseline film bro knows about Chekhov's gun. And it's when, in basic storytelling, if you show something to the audience, that thing needs to be used later on. Otherwise, it's not essential to the story and needs to be taken out. So they had like this thing with a blue dragonfly early on in the movie, with Chris Pine's character and his wife, and then that blue dragonfly comes back at the very end of the movie. It's not the same dragonfly, obviously, but it is the same type of dragonfly, so it's like that symbolism that's really nice, and it helps Chris Pratt's character make his decision at the end of the movie. It's great. Great stuff like that that is just feels like maybe almost kind of lost nowadays in storytelling. But a fun original movie. Obviously, Dungeons & Dragons is an immensely popular game that, it's a game franchise that has spanned generations of people. You know, you're playing this in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, I think the 70s. But definitely in the 80s and 90s, like even in Stranger Things, that show takes place in the 80s. They play a game that is based off of Dungeons & Dragons. I don't think they were actually allowed to call it Dungeons & Dragons, but that's exactly what they were playing in the first season. So, and also all of the Stranger Things villains, I think, are based off of Dungeons & Dragons villains. Like, I think Vecna is like an actual Dungeons & Dragons villain. But cool stuff like that, you know, again, spans generations of kids. So immensely popular franchise, make it into a really well done movie. And all of that being a success, like they could easily, in today's Hollywood, they could easily make another Dungeons and Dragons movie and give another. So this one was called Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. So if they want, I'm sure they can make another Dungeons and Dragons and give it a subtitle. And then it's just another adventure with a different group of heroes who, I mean, they may or may not run into. If you want to put in the same landscape and just a different heroes and villains, they could bring back Chris Pine as like a cameo or something like that. It definitely sets up the potential for them to make a couple more, you know, movies about. I don't know if this specific movie was based on a real Dungeons and Dragons adventure that you can like buy and play with your friends, or if it was just a completely original plot. I would imagine they probably borrowed plot points from actual adventures you can do in Dungeons and Dragons, but there are so many adventures in Dungeons and Dragons. I'm sure they can look to all of those for inspirations to make another movie if they so choose. But I had a really good time watching this film. Next up on the docket is Air. I'm going to see that Wednesday. Heard nothing but good things about Air on the internet, from articles I read, critic reviews, even a couple people who got to go see Air that I knew said it was really well done. So I'm excited to go see that movie. Obviously, I'm a huge basketball fan. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon back together. Chris Tucker, I hear, puts in an amazing performance. He hasn't been in a movie in a couple years. So it's fun to see all these guys on the screen. Ben Affleck is directing it, or did direct it. And then he also plays Phil Knight, who is the creator and I think CEO of Nike. And Matt Damon plays Sonny Vaccaro, who's the one who, I think it was his idea to create the Air Jordan line around Michael Jordan. And obviously, if you don't know by now, the movie is about courting Michael Jordan to make the first shoe for him. Viola Davis is in it. She plays Dolores Jordan, Michael's mother. Michael Jordan's not in it, and there's a lot of clips out there of Ben Affleck, people asking him, hey, why isn't Michael Jordan in this movie? And he said it's because, a lot of people just think it's because they didn't want to afford like to pay for Michael Jordan to be in the movie, or someone like Michael Jordan to be in the movie, whatever. But Ben Affleck gives a really good reasoning where he says Michael Jordan has transcended basketball to the point, obviously now he's like such a cultural icon, right? Everyone knows who Michael Jordan is. Even if they're not a basketball fan, you know who Michael Jordan is because of his shoes at the very least. And he himself has transcended that, and his brand has transcended that to where if they try to put a kid on the screen and point him and say, hey, that's supposed to be Michael Jordan, the audience would just be like, would be taken out of the movie because they're like, well, no, that's not Michael Jordan. I know who Michael Jordan is. I know what Michael Jordan is, and that's not Michael Jordan. So instead of that, they kind of made him, I would imagine in the movie, they make him this almost mystifying person where the entire movie's about getting him to sign with Nike and create this shoe for him, and they never actually show him. So it's like that mystifying element of it. But he also talks about how he talked to Mike about the movie and certain elements about how it happened and stuff like that. So they got like the story great. And then they asked him, like, is there anyone maybe you want us to go out and get to play your mother? And before they could even finish the sentence, he said Viola Davis. So that was maybe one of the, he said that was maybe the easiest casting direction, the decision that they had to make was just go out and try and get Viola Davis to play Dolores Jordan, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I'm very excited to see that. And then Super Mario Brother movie, just, I went to go see Dungeons and Dragons on Friday night, and my movie theater was packed because so many people were going to see the Super Mario movie. It was insane how crowded that theater was. I asked the guy, I was like, what are people going to see right now? And he's like, the Mario movie. I was like, are you serious? And in my head, I kind of knew it was going to be the Mario movie, but I thought maybe like people are there for Air, for Dungeons and Dragons, and for Mario as like a nice even spread. Like, no, it was the most of the theater was packed out to see the Super Mario Brothers movie. And I know Chris Pratt, I know he does the Mario voice. Everyone was shitting on him because in the coming attractions to the Mario movie, they were making fun of him because he just sounds like Chris Pratt as Mario. He doesn't sound like Mario. But I did see a clip in the movie. There is a moment where Chris Pratt is doing the Mario voice. And they kind of work it into where it's like, it's an act that they do that voice for their business. So that was cool. It's like, yeah, he can do the voice. He can do the voice. His Wahoo is pretty good also. You saw that in the trailer. His Wahoo was pretty good. But I'm excited to see it. It's going to be a fun time, I think. So those are the two movies that are next up on the list for me. And we'll get into Star Wars now. Because Star Wars has, they had their celebration day of 2023 in London or wherever. And they announced all these new movies. Three of them were pretty big. Everything announced. There's a James Mangold-led film, a Dave Filoni-led film, and a Shireen Obaid Chinoy, who I've never heard of, but she is directing a new film as well. So James Mangold's film is set, I believe it was 25,000 years before the events of the Skywalker saga. A crazy long time ago, and it details the origins of the first Jedi. The first Force-sensitive Jedi. Now, Star Wars Theory, I don't know if anyone follows Star Wars Theory that listens to me, but Star Wars Theory is a very popular channel on YouTube, and he details some stuff that they could possibly use that's from Legends, and Star Wars Legends is just a conglomerate of stories that were decanonized, I think, by Disney, and but there's still Star Wars stories nonetheless. And in one of the stories, there is a race of beings, I don't remember the name, but there is a race of beings that would go around and collect different species, put them on this planet to see who was Force sensitive and who was not. And then they got to train in the light side of the Force. And if they were somehow the dark side of the Force, they send them somewhere else. Whatever. It could be something like that, where it's almost like a Hunger Games or The Greatest Game. I think that's the name. What's the name of that short story that you would have to read in high school? The Greatest Game, where it's like humans hunting humans, or one guy hunting humans. Whatever, kind of stuff like that, where it's survival of the fittest between all these different species to see who is Force sensitive, and then the first Jedi would emerge out of all of them. Could be something like that, or it could be something completely different. James Mangold, he is familiar with like that superhero genre. He obviously, Star Wars isn't superheroes, it's sci-fi, so it's a little bit different, but he crushed Logan. Logan is, in my opinion, a top three superhero movie of all time. Probably top two, honestly. Like, it's up there with The Dark Knight in terms of a movie that transcends superheroes as like, it's an unbelievable film that happens to be centered around a superhero comic book character. So that was a really, really fantastic film. And this is something that is finally going to be a bit of original content in terms of movies. So, you know, everything obviously from this point now has been considered Skywalker stuff, right? There's no movies that's not centered around the Skywalker saga, or at least during those time periods. So to take this movie and go back tens of thousands of years could be refreshing. That's probably the one that I'm the, out of the three movies that were announced, it's the one that I'm most optimistic of. And I believe there is a High Republic TV show coming to Disney Plus as well. Disney Plus, the content there is bad. I haven't even been watching Mandalorian. I watched like two episodes of the new season of Mandalorian. I don't know. I'm not thrilled with it. But with this movie, it's so far backdated to like the origins of the Jedi. It does hold some promise to deliver some good original storytelling content for Star Wars for Disney. The other one is the Dave Filoni-led project. Now, Dave Filoni, I love. I feel like he gets Star Wars. But his biggest problem is that he is so deathly attached to the characters that he created in the Clone Wars. He doesn't really know how to do anything else. Like, he created these characters with the Clone Wars, right? Which is takes place during the Skywalker saga before episode 3, in between episodes 2 and 3, and then up to Order 66. And then he had a hand in Mandalorian with Jon Favreau. And he can't really seem to go in an original direction. He's really focused on the characters he created. Like, Ahsoka is getting her own Disney Plus TV show. That was an original character that he created for the Clone Wars TV show. And obviously, she became a fan favorite and an integral part to that whole saga, especially now. She's getting shoehorned into all these different events. So the Ahsoka series, the Book of Boba Fett, and the Mandalorian, and whatever else Disney gets to be able to shoehorn in between now and that movie's release date, Dave Filoni, this movie's supposed to be a amalgamation of all those storylines and plot points into one big, I guess, event that kind of ties everything up with a nice bow on it. Okay, whatever. And then the last one, which is probably going to be a catastrophic failure, is the Charmaine Obaid Chinoy directed movie that brings Daisy Ridley back as Rey in a film that is set 15 years after the Rise of Skywalker, where she gets to basically do what everyone asked Luke to do, which was build the Jedi back up and be like a Jedi master, because Rey is, you know, the strongest being ever created in Star Wars ever, because she sucks. I don't know. So Charmaine Obaid Chinoy says the Academy Award and Emmy Award winning director behind Miss Marvel, Saving Face, and more will lead a film set after the events of Rise of Skywalker that will feature Daisy Ridley back as Rey as she builds a new Jedi Order. So it's going to be horrible. It's horrible. This is going to be really, really bad. Now, I don't hate... I'm not a sicko that hates on the actors. Obviously, Star Wars fans have a nasty history of bullying the actual actors that they don't like because they don't like their characters in the Star Wars movie. That's whack. I've never been a part of that. I've never bashed that. Like, I bashed Rose because her character is unnecessary and they shoehorned her into The Last Jedi. And then she was done away with in The Rise of Skywalker. Daisy Ridley, I have no problems with Daisy Ridley, but her career, I would be lying to you if I said her career didn't tank because of how ill-received Rey was as a character in the Star Wars trilogy. She is not working. She's in nothing. I've seen her in nothing. So she's back as Rey, getting her own movie again. Are they going to include Poe? Are they going to include Finn? Any of the other characters from the sequel trilogy? I have no idea. But this gives me a perfect time to talk a little bit more about Star Wars, because we haven't really talked about Star Wars a lot on this podcast recently. The sequel trilogies were a complete mess, obviously. The characters were not fleshed out at all. There was unfinished plot points in the entirety of the movie. And even if you just look at box office, like by the end of that trilogy, people were just fed up with it. The Last Jedi is the most divisive movie in the entire franchise. A lot of people hate it. And some people inexplicably like it. I don't know how. It's the entire sequel trilogy is just a massive character assassination of the original trilogy characters, Han, Luke, and Leia. It's bad. It's just overall bad, and you'd think that they'd be smart enough to stay away from that Skywalker saga and to try and almost make people forget that the sequels ever happened, because that's what I do. I just pretend they're not canon. I just pretend that they are not they're not a part of the timeline. They don't exist. They're not real, you know? And I could literally spend the next hour and a half on this podcast and talk about what everything that's wrong with the sequels, everything that's wrong with their characters, whether it's unrealized potential, different story routes they could have gone, the fact that they should not have included the original trilogy characters at all, could have made a whole different story with all new characters. People would have loved it. But instead, they played on nostalgia a little too much. I think the one thing that they did in Episode 8 that I actually liked, and Rian Johnson is a good director too, don't get me wrong. Rian Johnson is a good director. He has several very good movies that I enjoy, but he doesn't get Star Wars. So, me saying this, the one thing that he did right was at the end, the whole thing with Episode 8 is that Rey is no one. She's no one. She's just some girl who got lucky and is force sensitive and is super strong. Obviously, she's a little too strong for just being a random girl who never used the force before, and then she ends up saving the universe. But so she's a little too strong, but she's just a random girl. You know, I thought that was a great message for Rian Johnson to kind of hammer home. And then at the end scene, they had that kid use the force to like pick up that broom to show that there are people all around the world that are just normal people, and then they happen to be force sensitive. You know, you don't have to be from the Skywalker lineage. You don't have to be from Irol, the Palpatine lineage, to be a super strong force user. You can be anyone, right? That is what it's all about. And then, of course, Episode 9 comes along, and J.J. Abrams absolutely just cans any idea that Rian Johnson planted in Episode 8. And he just goes and shoehorns Palpatine back in and makes Rey a Palpatine and then gives her the last name Skywalker. And I swear to God, I'm not going to see this Rey independent movie. I'm not going to go see it. But if I see on the internet that they address her by Master Skywalker, I'm going to fucking hurt somebody. Like, there is going to be a problem. And you know they're just going to have a little youngling walk up to Rey in the opening scenes of the movie and say, Master Skywalker, just like that kid said to Anakin before he slaughtered all the younglings in the Jedi Temple. You know they're going to have that. You know they're going to have a youngling call her Master Skywalker, and it's going to be horrible. Just rage-inducing for this fan base. So, I mean, it's not too late to scrap it. Obviously, they said it's in production, but it's not too late to scrap that movie. You can get rid of that. The Dave Filoni one, sure. That is my. It's probably gonna be okay, I guess. And then The James Mangold one holds some potential just because of the sheer originality of it, but remains to be seen. Then they got some different, obviously got the Ahsoka series, which could be all right. The Ahsoka series could be all right. I'm not going to bash that too much. It could be fine. We'll see how it goes. I got to finish Mandalorian. I think that actually finished up recently. This past week, it might be done, the season finale. So I got to just binge watch however many episodes I have left. 6, I think. It's an 8-season episode. Or 8-episode season, right? That's how they do Mandalorian. So I got like 6 episodes I got to watch. What else? I love... The thing about Star Wars now that I love, and this is actually kind of part of the problem, is that all those kids like myself who grew up watching Star Wars, we got the prequels, right? And the prequels nowadays are loved because we grew up watching those movies and now we're adults. So it's like whenever Star Wars is brought up, we're like, yeah, Revenge of the Sith is one of my favorite Star Wars movies. And that's a lot of people. And Kathleen Kennedy, she's like the head of president of Lucasfilm or whatever, who needs to be, she needs to be fired. I'm sorry. I don't really advocate for people losing their jobs or stuff like that. But she needs to be fired. She has ruined Star Wars with all of her ideas. So, and all of her, everything she's greenlit has just almost been basically an unmitigated disaster. So, you know that. She sees this group of young adults like myself and people in their mid-20s to early 30s who grew up watching the prequels and says, aha, let's do more of that. Let's give them more of that. Let's more of the prequels. And that's where all these other shows spawn from, like The Bad Batch, which I kind of like The Bad Batch. And then just more stuff about Skywalker. And that's why these sequel trilogy happened, because it was just more about Skywalker, Skywalker, Skywalker. And it's not the same. Like, the sequels lack the fantastic storytelling of the original trilogy. They lack the unbelievable fight choreography of the prequels. They lack George Lucas. Like, these are characters that he created, and then now they just are making new characters who lack the passion, the flair, and the creativity of the characters that he created. And they're siphoning off of things that he made to create new things that are just not good. And like I said, I'm going to wrap up my thoughts on this Star Wars Celebration Day. I had to mention the 3 films that were announced, because those were like the biggest things. Obviously, Star Wars, you know, you can pump out however many different spin-off TV shows you want, for eternity. But at the end of the day, not everyone has Disney Plus, but a lot of people can go to the movies. So the movies are really the big thing for Star Wars. The James Mangold film, I think, holds promise. The Dave Filoni film is kind of just shoulder shrug. Whatever, is what it is. And then that other film with Rey, that's going to stink. That's going to be really bad. And I'm not looking forward to it. And I'm not going to, I shouldn't even say I'm not looking forward to it. I'm not going to see it. So, indifferent, put it that way. So that's Star Wars Celebration Day. Very, very, very sad. Sad stuff. So let's move on, because it makes me depressed to talk about what Star Wars has become. Quick congratulations to Jon Rahm, who wins the Masters. Brooks Koepka, a collapse for Brooks Koepka. He led basically the entire weekend, and then going into early Sunday, I think Jon Rahm took the lead. And basically held a 2-3 stroke lead all of Sunday. So it ended up being not that climactic, I guess, or that intense on the final day of the Masters. You thought maybe Brooks Koepka would put up a little bit of a fight, but I think he had like more than halfway through the day, I think he had like 3 or 4 bogeys that ended up putting him around like -8. And then Rahm was at like -12, -11 basically the entire day. So ended up not being that climactic. Congratulations to John Rahm. He had a fantastic weekend. Obviously, Brooks Koepka also had a fantastic weekend, but just couldn't hang on the final day to make a shot at that jacket. Congratulations to John Rahm for winning the Masters. Bit of NHL news. The Boston Bruins set an NHL record with 63 wins in the regular season. Like I said, a new record. And it's shocking to think, because this is how my mind kind of works a little bit. And the season's not even over yet. I think, when's the season over? Thursday? Yeah, Thursday's the final day of the regular season. But the way my mind works sometimes with hockey and basketball is like, I'm like, all right, they're both 82 games. The same length of time, the same amount of games are being played. And we've seen in the NBA teams win 65-plus games, 70-plus games. You know, the Warriors went 73-9. And then the Bulls before that was 72-10. So they all, those are all-time teams. Like, that doesn't happen every day. But we've seen teams like, I was looking at the other day, the Cavs in back-to-back seasons won 61 games and then 66 games when LeBron was there. That was his last season in Cleveland. I think they won 66 games. Stuff like that happens quite frequently. Maybe not as recently, but teams win 60 plus games a good amount. Let's see who the wins totals in the standings for this year. No one actually eclipsed 60 wins. The Bucks won 58-24, and they had the best record in the NBA. So no one got 60 wins this year, but we have seen multiple teams win 60, 65-plus games in the NBA. So the fact that the NHL regular season record was only 62 games, the NHL's hard. Hockey's hard. Hockey's one of those sports, kind of like baseball, where it's like the better team might not always win. You know, the team with the better players doesn't always win. And it's like that fickle kind of sport. Because in football and in basketball, almost always the better team, the more well-constructed team, or, you know, sometimes basketball just comes down to which team has the best individual single player on the court. And then football is just the better team is going to win. Almost always. But with hockey and baseball, it's like any given night, a team that is really good might just lose to a worse team. So congratulations to the Bruins. They've just been steamrolling everyone, it feels like, all year. I'm sure everyone in Boston, all Bruins fans, are thinking Stanley Cup or bust. But that Eastern Conference, like that, especially the Metro Division, is going to be pretty gross. Do they have a playoff thing yet almost? Well, regardless, that Metro Division, I mean, you have, like, look, in the Atlantic, Boston's 63-12, and the next team is Toronto at 47-21. I'm not counting overtime losses, but that's crazy. That's crazy. Boston's 63-12-5, and Toronto's 47-21-11. They're second in the Atlantic. That Metro Division is a dogfight, though, with Carolina, New Jersey, and the Rangers. That is a dogfight. The playoffs are going to be great. I'm very excited for the NHL playoffs. I pay loosely attention to the Rangers during the regular season, and then by the time the playoffs roll around, I kind of lock in a little bit more because playoff hockey is sick. So I've been getting really into playoff hockey the past couple years. And for anyone that's trying to get into hockey, I recommend that. loosely follow a team, you know, learn the players, learn about, you know, where they come from, what positions they play, what lines they play on, get a feel for that kind of stuff with a specific team that you're trying maybe to follow. You don't got to watch every game, but watch some. And then when the playoffs come around, you really want to get like a good dose of hockey. Watch the playoffs, because playoff hockey is one of the best playoff sports. Maybe, honestly, out of all of the sports, playoff hockey might be the most intense. It's crazy. And they're always really tight series. Like, you rarely see a team steamroll someone in the playoffs. Like, you rarely see a 4-1 or 4-0 sweep. Like, the early rounds of the NBA playoffs are usually blowouts. Usually. But you can see a higher seed versus a lower seed in the NHL. They can go 6-7 games. It happens. So everyone always has like a fighting chance in the NHL playoffs, which is always really fun. So looking forward to that. Let's go to, we got a couple of NFL headlines to talk about, and then we'll get into the NBA. We had some head coach firings. I think one coach stepped down. And then the play-in tournament and some other news. So for the first bit of NFL news here, it's a bit more somber, a little bit sadder. It has to do with Dwayne Haskins, the late Dwayne Haskins, who just about a year ago was killed when he was crossing a road in Florida, I believe it was. He was struck by a vehicle and was killed. And now, again, this is almost a year later, Haskins' attorney and his widow are suing the state of Florida to disclose more evidence, as they are now alleging Haskins was, quote, targeted and drugged as part of a blackmail and robbery conspiracy before his death in April of 2022. This is Ian Rappaport talked about it. I think Ryan Clark tweeted about it as well. Now, I'm going to read this whole thing here, so bear with me for a second, because it is quite a bit of words, but I want to read all of it. Rick Essley and the Essley Law Firm, I guess in Florida that would be. So just bear with me for a second. So former Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Dwayne Haskins Jr. was tragically killed during the early mornings of April 9th, 2022, Broward County, Florida. The Florida Highway Patrol traffic homicide report shows that Dwayne was only feet away from making it safely across the roadway when he was struck and killed by an old dump truck. This truck was going faster than the speed limit, carrying excessive cargo, had brake system problems, and was traveling on low tread tires with separated sidewalls. The truck driver hit Dwayne with the front left side of the truck. This is directly in front of where the driver was sitting behind the steering wheel. The driver told the police that before he hit Dwayne, he saw Dwayne ahead of his vehicle in the center lane. The report also confirms that before Dwayne was killed, there was multiple other drivers who were driving in front of and behind the dump truck and saw Dwayne on the roadway and avoided hitting him. A few drivers even had time to call 911 and were present in the area before Dwayne was hit. There were taillights, brake lights, and hazard flashes from these cars, as well as a brief traffic construction signal board, all of which illuminated Dwayne as the dump truck driver was approaching the area where Dwayne was crossing. So you could see they're trying to point out here that there's no way this dump truck driver just flat out could not see Dwayne Haskins. Because there was all these lights, there was multiple other cars that saw him. The driver even said previously that he saw Dwayne in the center lane. Many questions remain as to why the truck driver did not avoid hitting Dwayne, given the highly visible activity in the area before the impact and the fact that the other drivers did not hit him. The truck driver's cell phone records have not yet been disclosed. The report also notes that the driver refused to provide a blood sample to the police at the scene and still has not provided the alcohol test results. As to what occurred in the hours before Dwayne was killed, many questions remain unanswered. It is believed that Dwayne was targeted and drugged as part of a blackmail and robbery conspiracy. In fact, his highly expensive watch was stolen from him shortly before his death. The filing of this lawsuit is an important step in the process of uncovering the complete truth about this tragedy. The civil justice system allows for subpoenas to be issued for critical documents and for sworn testimonies to be taken of people who have knowledge about the events leading up to Dwayne's death. We ask any person with knowledge of the incident, please contact and a phone number and email. So that's that. But quite a turn, almost exactly a year later. Very, very scary and shady stuff going on there. Not really sure what the deal is or why this is happening or, you know, how much, I'd hate to say how much credibility it has. I want nothing but closure for Dwayne and his family. And if this is the way they can get it, then I hope they get what they're looking for. I really do. But obviously, a tragic, tragic circumstances. The bit in the beginning about, you know, several other people were able to avoid him and there was lights and stuff everywhere. And then somehow, some way, this guy in a dump truck can just is able to hit Dwayne. Definitely alarming and raises a few eyebrows. I'm not sure how many people were aware of that part prior to this lawsuit being publicized, or not publicized, but released to the public, I guess. It's interesting. It's an interesting story to keep track of. It's definitely heartbreaking and sad. Obviously, Dwayne Haskins, was he even 25 years old? 24, 25 years old? He was a young dude in the prime of his life. Playing football, you know, obviously I know he wasn't a starter. His pro career wasn't probably what everyone thought he might be able to do coming out of Ohio State, but that is the least of the problems here, obviously. And it's always tough to see like a young kid like that just out of nowhere too, you know. Obviously there are a bunch of questions still revolving around the fact, like, why exactly was he crossing that highway? Like, what was he doing? Other people were stopping and took notice of him. It does definitely sound a bit sketchy, and it definitely sounds like there are things missing from the story that no one probably really knows unless you were there firsthand watching the whole thing unfold, you know? Very sad stuff. But yeah, like I said, I hope Dwayne Haskins' family, they're able to find the closure that they are looking for with this lawsuit of Florida. So the other bit of NFL news, there seems to be some progress in the Lamar Jackson free agency. Well, I don't even know what it's not free agency, but the situation he's got going on in Baltimore, and it's encouraging if you are a Baltimore Ravens fan. So Odell Beckham Jr., he was being courted by a seemingly copious amount of teams. I think he was connected at some point to any one of these teams. The Giants, the Jets, the Packers, the Ravens, the Rams again. Cowboys were a huge suitor. You know, Jerry Jones was basically coming out and telling people he will be a Cowboy next year. But he's finally made his decision. And it is with the Baltimore Ravens. He signed with the Ravens for a one-year deal worth up to $18 million, $15 million guaranteed for Odell Beckham Jr. for the 2023 season. And how did he come to make the decision to sign with the Ravens? It turns out he was being courted by none other than Lamar Jackson. So, all signs point to a positive outcome if you're the Baltimore Ravens fans, where it just seemed like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, it seemed like Lamar Jackson was never going to play another down, a single down again for the Baltimore Ravens. Here we are now, April 10th, and Odell signed with the Ravens, and he revealed and Lamar revealed that they had been FaceTiming and talking to each other, and Lamar had been recruiting him to come to Baltimore. So now it's just suddenly went from Lamar is never going to play with the Ravens again, that relationship is shot, to he's actively recruiting free agents to come play for Baltimore. You got to imagine now at some point, you know, obviously all the signs have completely flipped directions, and it's probably safe to assume now that Lamar intends to play for the Ravens, because obviously why would he recruit a wide receiver free agent who he's not short of suitors? You know, Odell had at least two other teams in the Jets and the Cowboys who were seriously interested in signing him this offseason. So he could have went somewhere else. Instead, he picks the Ravens, who, to the public eye, didn't have a quarterback. You know, yeah, Lamar's franchise tagged, but I think everyone was basically on the same page, like, he's probably not going to play under that franchise tag. No one was going to trade two first-round picks and then also sign him. So the Ravens were kind of locked up here and didn't really have a quarterback going into next season. But now they just signed Odell. He was being courted by Lamar. So for all intents and purposes, it's probably safe to assume that Lamar Jackson is going to return to the Baltimore Ravens. At some point, there's going to be a deal done where both sides are happy, and Lamar is going to show up to camp. He's going to have a new wide receiver one with Odell. Now, obviously, there are some, you know, not flags, but some hurdles to jump through with Odell. You got to make sure he stays healthy. Obviously, he has to perform. This is a one-year prove-it deal. If he has success with Lamar in the Ravens and he's able to stay healthy and put up some solid numbers, I'm sure the Ravens would offer him a 2 or 3 year deal. Again, I think he's 30, coming off an ACL injury. Probably at most, after this contract, he's getting a 3 year deal from someone. I don't know if it's the Ravens or someone else, but this is very much a prove it deal for him. He chose Lamar to be his quarterback on this prove it deal. We'll see how that works out for him. If he can stay healthy, put up some numbers. Obviously, if the Ravens win, he's going to be happy. But I could see him putting up 1,000 yards with Lamar if they're both healthy and the Ravens, you know, they can compete for the AFC North. I don't think that's ever been in question. It's just been about, can Lamar stay healthy, you know? Because when he's healthy, they're very good, man. They are a very good football team. So with Baltimore, they are the landing spot for Odell. A kind of a twist of fate here, because obviously you have the Jets who are going through this whole, they're jumping through all these hurdles to try and appease Aaron Rodgers, who is still not a New York Jet, by the way. They got Alan Lazard. Odell was on their list, and he was heavily connected. He actually was scheduled, Odell was scheduled to meet with the Jets the next day. He signed with the Ravens, I think, when did he sign with the Ravens? Saturday? It was before Easter Sunday, I believe. So Saturday, I think, and he was scheduled to meet, or Friday maybe, I don't know. This past weekend, he signed, it was reported that he was signing with the Ravens, but he was scheduled that next day to meet with the Jets, and I guess just decided that that wasn't going to be necessary. And he picks the Baltimore Ravens. Now, if you were to ask me whose quarterback situation is more shady, the Ravens or the Jets, I would say the Jets. Because right now, the Ravens, they have Lamar on the contract. There's just a dispute about how much money, like, what are we doing? They have their quarterback. They just need to figure out the contract part. And that has happened a lot. Again, you know, you'd think maybe at some point they would be like, all right, well, we got to get rid of him. Maybe they never even lost hope. They were just taking a break. I have no idea what's going on between Lamar and the Ravens, but clearly he intends to be the quarterback of the Ravens if he's recruiting wide receiver free agents. Now, with the Jets, all of this is hindering on, like, Aaron Rodgers' word, which is like he intends to play for the New York Jets. That word doesn't mean much to me. And what's the worst case scenario here if you're the Jets? Zach Wilson's your starting quarterback next year. That's the worst case scenario. So, I don't know, man. I guess that's really what it came down to. It's like, how confident are you guys can get Aaron Rodgers? Or how confident was Odell in the Jets that they can get Aaron Rodgers from the Packers? As opposed to, are the Ravens going to be able to give Lamar the contract that he is acceptable with? So it's crazy, man. I think that's a very interesting twist in this whole saga in the NFL offseason. But one of the bigger name wide receivers now is off the board. Odell gets $15 million guaranteed on a one-year prove-it deal with the Ravens, up to 18 in incentives. And I got to imagine those incentives are going to be something like 1,000 yards or, you know, X amount of touchdowns, something like that. Individual accolades. I don't know, maybe they gave him an incentive for an All-Pro too as well. Which would be crazy for Odell to make an All-Pro team. I don't think that's going to happen, but maybe Pro Bowl. Who knows? Very, very interesting twist. But again, very encouraging signs if you're a Ravens fan. You got to be ecstatic that this news came out and that on top of it, Lamar was the one who recruited him to Baltimore. Crazy turn of events. All right, over on to the NBA, the hardwood. We got two coach firings, or at least one firing and one stepping down. But the Houston Rockets are declining to pick up the fourth-year option on... Actually, no firings. Because the Rockets are just declining to pick up the fourth-year option on Coach Steven Silas's contract, ending his three-year run with the team as the franchise continues to rebuild. All of this is according to Woj, by the way. So Steven Silas out as the Rockets head coach. They will probably, maybe, possibly get Victor Wembanyama. They might get Victor Wembanyama. I'm thinking the Pistons might have. The Pistons are 17-65. Nope, the Pistons are going to get Victor Wembanyama. Wow, look at that. The Pistons, well, sorry, sometimes I forget. The lottery has to happen still. So the three worst teams in the NBA this year by far, and I mean really by far, were the Detroit Pistons had the worst record at 17-65, and then the Houston Rockets and San Antonio Spurs were both 22-60. Would low-key love Greg Popovich, to get Victor Wembanyama. That would be awesome. Even more so, I'd love for him to get Scoot Henderson. I'm very high on Scoot Henderson. The Spurs getting the number one or number two pick, whoever goes one and two, are going to benefit being from the San Antonio Spurs. If the Rockets and Pistons get the number one and number two overall pick, Scoot Henderson and Victor Wembanyama, it's going to suck for them. They're going to be on really bad teams for a really long time. Because both of those teams are just, they're horrible. I know the Pistons didn't have Cade Cunningham this year. He got hurt really early on and missed the entire year. But still, those will probably be the top three picks. We'll see in which order those go. Obviously, the more games you lose, the higher odds you have to get the number one pick. So right now, the Pistons have the highest odds in the number one pick. And then for Houston and San Antonio, it's a toss-up. I would love San Antonio to get the number two pick. That way they can get Scoot Henderson. If they somehow sneak up to one, that would be even cooler for Victor Wembanyama to be there. Obviously, the Spurs have a great history of big men leading their franchise to unimaginable heights, right? First with David Robinson, and then Tim Duncan came along. And they were the San Antonio Spurs. They were one of the top five best teams in the Western Conference for 15 years, 20 years. It was insane, an insane run that they had as a dynasty. And yes, they were a dynasty, make no mistake about it. So I would love for them to get one of these two highly regarded young talents in Wembanyama or Scoot. So, the Rockets. They're gone with Steven Silas. They are moving on. And then the other, so by the way, Woj says among the prominent candidates in the Rockets search will be former Celtics coach Ime Udoka, which I don't recommend, Golden State assistant Kenny Atkinson, which I highly recommend, and former Lakers coach Frank Vogel. If Raptors coach Nick Nurse becomes available, he'll be in serious consideration too. My slam dunk, hands down, best pick for the Rockets moving forward, if they are serious about player development, is Kenny Atkinson. Because what that dude did for the Brooklyn Nets was slept on, kind of brushed under the rug in a way. He turned that franchise around and made them a viable destination. He made them the reason why Durant and Kyrie Irving wanted to go to the Nets, because they saw what they had there and were like, hey, why wouldn't we sign there? They got like a decent young core. Like they got, we can make that our own franchise. But they were so bad for so long. And then he took D'Angelo Russell and everyone else on that team and Spencer Dinwiddie and all them. He made them viable. It made them a viable team, a good team, a fun team to watch. So he developed a lot of those players into good, solid NBA players. And then obviously Durant and Kyrie came over and they signed there and got him fired and then blew everything up. So Atkinson, I still don't know how he got a head coaching job, because the only reason why he was fired and the Nets parted ways with him is because Durant and Kyrie came over there and said, hey, we don't want Kenny Atkinson to be a coach. We want to hire who we want. And then they hired Steve Nash and that didn't work out either. So no real reason to why he was fired other than Durant and Kyrie didn't want him. And I don't really know why he hasn't been hired yet, but I would, if I'm the Rockets, I would make a hard push for Kenny Atkinson, just given his track record with Brooklyn. He definitely deserves another shot to be a head coach, because he got the short end of the stick there in Brooklyn. So that would be my number one pick. If Nick Nurse became available, I think he would also be probably of close to my top pick as well. But I would stay away from Udoka, and I would stay away from Frank Vogel. Ime Udoka, I mean, he didn't really show anything worth noteworthy of being a head coach other than scandal. Because, I mean, look what happened with the Celtics this year. They lost their coach in the beginning of the year because of this inner franchise scandal, and then another guy steps up into his shoes, and the Celtics don't miss a beat. They finish second in the East, second best record in the NBA. No problem, right? So it doesn't really speak to him as a coach as much as like that team is very well put together, and I could probably step in and win 50 plus games with that Celtics team. They are very good and very talented. So, wouldn't give too much consideration to Ime Udoka because of the baggage. I think Udoka needs to go and maybe kind of reshape himself a little bit as an assistant for a season or two before getting another head coaching opportunity. Now, I know what happened to him was a bit sketchy and probably shouldn't have been publicized the way it was, but we can't go back. It is what it is. I don't know. I probably just wouldn't hire him. Maybe another year as an assistant. He goes and comes in as an assistant, and then he can get another head coaching job somewhere. But Frank Vogel, stay far away from him too. I just don't personally think Frank Vogel is a very good coach. I know he won a championship with the Lakers, but like another instance of, was it the coach or was it the team? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Nick Nurse is up there, and I might pick Kenny Atkinson. So the other one is Dwayne Casey. Dwayne Casey is out as the Detroit Pistons head coach. According to him, he will move into a front office role. So Pistons candidates will include Bucks assistant Charles Lee, Raptors assistant Adrian Griffin, Ime Udoka, Heat assistant Chris Quinn, among others. So Udoka is going to get a shot here. Ime Udoka is going to get a shot here as a candidate for one of these teams, one of these young, bad teams. See if he can land it. He seems to be, I don't know. There are some assistants on that list. What is it? The Bucks assistant, a Raptors assistant, a Heat assistant, among others. That's according to Woj yet again. Pistons GM Troy Weaver is expected to talk a number of candidates for his open head coaching job, including two assistants he worked with in Oklahoma City, Chicago's Josh Longstaff and Brooklyn's Brian Keefe. So maybe a leg up for those guys in the head coaching search. But that's that in terms of head coach firings. We got the play-in tournament. So final day of the, before we go into play-in tournament, the final days of the regular season was Sunday, and we had some massive drama. Mason Plumlee got into it with Bones Highland. No punches thrown. They did have to be separated. They were getting each other's grills. Something that escalated more than that fight, though, was between Rudy Gobert and Kyle Anderson. I saw some tweets. Maybe there was Kyle Anderson was saying, you know, grab a effing rebound, and Gobert snapped at him a little bit. And then Gobert kind of swiped at him. He swiped at his face from across, like, the huddle. And I believe it was Naz Reid, it might have been Taurean Prince. But one of those guys got up. I think it was actually was Taurean Prince. One of those guys got up and pushed Gobert after he swiped at Anderson. Pushed him away. And then Rudy Gobert was promptly sent home. And now officially suspended for one game, which is, of course, the play-in game against the Los Angeles Lakers. If the Timberwolves lose, they will have to play another play-in game to try and make the playoffs. And then, obviously, if they win, they'll be in the Western Conference playoffs. But he is missing this first play-in game. I think it's beneficial to the Timberwolves because Rudy Gobert is bad. And this Timberwolves team, this is why things don't go their way. This is why, when no matter how much young talent they have, they seem to just throw it all away. They were a good team. They were building something. D'Angelo Russell obviously wasn't happy there. They had to trade him, I think. But why? Why did you mortgage your future and young assets for Rudy Gobert? A guy who cannot do anything other than block the basketball, alley-oops, and that's it. He can't hit free throws at a high rate. He has no offensive game whatsoever except for being a lob threat. Doesn't play great perimeter defense. Like, not that he can. He's just... Now you have to play alongside Karl Anthony Towns, who's another center. Like, I get the thought process. Gobert can be the defensive rebounding guy, and Kat can kind of focus on spreading the floor more. But you had a solid team around you, man. Oh, and then on top of that, Jaden McDaniels broke his hand because he punched a wall going into the tunnel. He punched a wall, he fractured his hand, so he's also out probably for the playoffs or the foreseeable future of the playoffs. Who knows how long the Timberwolves go, but he's out for the play-in tournament at the very least. So that's another good sign. The Timberwolves, real strong end to the season. There has never been... I cannot imagine Anthony Edwards is going to stay in Minnesota. He is going to go to a huge market team on the coast, whether it's Los Angeles or somewhere in New York, somewhere else on the East Coast. He's from Georgia. That's why he went to Georgia. Maybe he goes, signs somewhere down there. Florida, maybe. He's going to a bigger market. He's not staying in Minnesota, I promise you. So he's going to leave. You're stuck with Karl Anthony Towns. You're stuck paying Rudy Gobert $40 million. Horrible position to be in. And you did it to yourself. No one forced your hand. No one like was pressing you to be like, we got to make a big splash. And then someone said, Rudy Gobert? Is that what happened in your front office? We need to make a big splash. We need to make a big acquisition for our team. And the name you settled on was Rudy Gobert for a handful of draft picks and a handful of young players that you could have kept for yourself to help build your team around your young core. Pathetic, bro. Really, really pathetic. Rudy Gobert is a moron. He's not a smart individual. He is a dummy. He's not a good basketball player. And he will be the downfall of the Minnesota Timberwolves should they move on. I would actually love it if... Oh, actually, no, never mind. Because whoever wins this game between the Lakers and Minnesota is automatically in. So I would like to have them lose. I would like to have them lose to the Lakers and then have Rudy Gobert be exposed in the second play-in game. That would be hilarious. That would be ideal. But let's get into the play-in tournament here. So the first set of games are tomorrow night on Tuesday. Hawks at the Heat and the Timberwolves at the Lakers. I'm going to go with the Heat and the Lakers to win these two play-in games. I'll probably parlay them. Obviously, I think the Timberwolves are just a mound of dysfunction right now. And the Lakers have been playing unbelievable basketball. Karl-Anthony Towns has kind of been in foul trouble this past couple weeks of the season. Last week of the season, he had a couple games where he got into foul trouble. Wasn't really asserting himself offensively. Anthony Davis has a chance to attack him and get him into foul trouble. He's been balling out. LeBron looks great. The team's just meshing. Like, they have been playing great basketball. Their confidence is sky high. They win one more game here, an 83rd game, and they're in the playoffs. NBD, no sweat, as the 7th seed. So they would play, if I remember, the Memphis Grizzlies, which would be a nightmare if you're Memphis, in my opinion. I think that is the worst playoff matchup Memphis could possibly get, and I think they actually could very easily be out in 5 games. Like, I could see the Lakers beating Memphis 4-1. I really could. It'd probably be 6 games. But I would definitely take the Lakers against Minnesota to lock up the 7th seed. And I would also take them to beat Memphis, the number 2 seed. As for the East, you got the Hawks and the Heat. So the Heat, the winner of this game is going to play the Celtics. Not great. You're probably, I mean, the East is irrelevant here because you have the play-in games. The play-in teams are Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, and Chicago. So the two out of those four teams that end up making the playoffs officially, you're lining up to play the two best teams in the NBA with the Bucks and the Celtics. You're just asking to get slaughtered. Now, obviously, the Heat winning would set up a Boston Heat matchup, which has been going on for the past couple postseasons, where they've had really intense playoff matchups. So that will be fun regardless. Jimmy Butler is a fiend in the playoffs, but this Miami team, not really as good as they were last year. Obviously, they're just kind of down statistically in terms of their shooting percentage. They shoot a lot of threes, and they were shooting them really well last year, and this year, not so much. Again, percentage-wise, for like all their three-point shooters is down by at least 2 points. But so you're playing for Boston, and then Chicago and Toronto, they're playing. I mean, the team that's playing for the 8th seed is playing to see who gets swept by Milwaukee in the first round. It's not going to be fun. My best guess here, we got, so these first, the first two games, like I said, it's going to be the Heat and the Hawks, Timberwolves, Lakers. I got the Heat and the Lakers winning. Those will be the 7th seed. So I got the Lakers playing the Grizzlies and the Heat playing the Celtics. So Wednesday's games will be Bulls, Raptors, Thunder, and Pelicans. I really like the Thunder. I think they're a very good team. They're a good young team. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's a beast. I'm going to bet on Brandon Ingram just based on what he was able to do with the Pelicans in the postseason last year against the Suns. Still no Zion. You got to think at some point, hopefully you're crossing your fingers, at some point he comes back for a playoff run here. But I'm going to take the Pelicans over the Thunder and the Bulls Raptors. I'm going to take the Raptors. let's take the Raptors. So then you'll have the Raptors and the Hawks, and I think the Raptors will probably win out again. I could see the Raptors winning two play-in games here. So I have the Heat and the Raptors as the 7 and 8 seed playing Boston and Milwaukee. And in the West, I'm still taking the Pelicans in the play-in. I'm taking the Pelicans throughout the play-in there. So I have the Lakers as the 7 seed playing Memphis, and the Pelicans beating the Thunder and then beating the Timberwolves to get into the 8 seed for the playoffs. Now, those second play-in game matchups for the 8th seed are going to be on Friday. So we got Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday for the play-in tournament this week, and then playoffs start on Saturday with Nets Sixers at 1, Celtics to be determined at 3:30, Knicks Cavs at 6, and probably outside of Knicks and Cavaliers, my favorite playoff matchup, Warriors and Kings at 8:30. That series is going to be so much fun. I'm so excited for that one. Let's just take a look at some of the other playoff matchups. I'll give my thoughts here going into the play-in and then the first round. Obviously, we'll have the play-in tournament. We'll have the first weekend of the playoffs, and next week we'll be able to talk more about like what each series might actually shake out looking like, because we'll probably be a couple games into at least one, a handful of series. So the Bucks, I think, are going to sweep whoever they play, whether it's, you know, Toronto, Chicago, or the loser of Miami, Atlanta, for whatever reason. Boston, same thing. They're going to steamroll. Philly, Brooklyn, I think, is a very interesting matchup and a matchup that I think Philadelphia didn't really want. Brooklyn is a scrappy team. Mikal Bridges is on a mission. Nick Claxton's a solid center who can, I'm not saying he's going to lock down Embiid or anything like that. Embiid's going to get his. He's going to get his 30, 35 a night if he has to. But Nick Claxton's a good center. He's a good center. He is. And this Brooklyn team, man, they're feisty. They are feisty. They are playing. They're meshing well. They found their identity. Let Mikal Bridges cook and everyone else hit your shots. Like, they play good defense. They got something, man. And Philly, you know, they got a history right now. They're trying to snap this stigma. Joel Embiid is my MVP, by the way. And we should actually wrap up the show with NBA awards that I got. So, I like Philly and Brooklyn. And then, of course, Cleveland and New York is going to be crazy competitive. Donovan Mitchell at the Garden. The guard play between Mitchell, Garland, Brunson, Quickly. I don't know if Randall's going to play in the beginning of this series. I don't know if he's even healthy enough. So that's a bit scary. Obviously not having Julius Randle, but the Knicks have been playing really well without him. So ideally they're able to keep it close and close out games against Cleveland. But that's going to be a great series. And then in the West, Denver, the worst possible outcome for the Denver Nuggets would be if the Lakers lose to Minnesota and then beat the winner of New Orleans OKC and get the 8 seed. And now suddenly the Nuggets are playing the Lakers. That's their worst nightmare. I think if you're the Nuggets, Minnesota, New Orleans, or OKC, they don't really scare you, but the Lakers should. The Lakers would be a horrible matchup for them to start. Memphis the same way. I don't think any one of these two top teams here want to play the Lakers in the first round. That's a tough first round matchup. Should the Denver Nuggets play any of the other teams outside of the Lakers, I think they'll be fine. Same thing with Memphis. But whoever gets stuck playing the Lakers is going to have a rough go of it. And I'm personally probably going to take the Lakers. Because why not? Sacramento, Golden State, my favorite playoff matchups outside Knicks and Cavs, like I said. Just two unbelievably efficient and fun offenses to watch. Not really a hot take, but my best guess is that there's going to be a lot of points scored in this series. Phoenix Clippers, Also, an intriguing matchup, not because I think it's going to be a great series, but because Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook get to play an entire playoff series against each other, which is always fun. It's not the same, obviously, as when Durant left OKC to go to Golden State. There's not that same animosity, I don't think. But it's always fun to see them on the court together, daydreaming about their days for the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I'm excited to see that playoff series as well. And last bit here before getting to our NBA awards, the Mavericks. Pray that the Mavericks get a pick outside of the top 10. If they get a pick 11 or lower in the lottery, that pick goes to the New York Knicks, which would be fantastic. If not, it gets deferred to next year if it's because it's top 10 protected. And that came from the Porzingis trade, I believe. So, pray that the Mavericks don't get their first round pick this year. They don't deserve it. And it would be hilarious because that just means Luka's one step closer to being a New York Knick. I will speak it into existence. Bring Luka to the Garden. He wants to play. He's not staying at Dallas. They are just, Mark Cuban is, and the Dallas Mavericks front office are active, and by hiring Jason Kidd, that's part of the push. They are almost pushing Luka out the door with the decisions that they are making. It's not going well for them. So to wrap up the podcast, we got our NBA awards here. More awards than usual. I'm not going to do, there's 8 awards, but I'm not going to pick executive of the year. I don't really care about that. But we got MVP, rookie of the year, defensive player of the year, sixth man of the year, most improved player, clutch player of the year, which is a new one, and then coach of the year. So MVP, Joel Embiid. I'm going to take Embiid over Jokic. I'm not giving Jokic his third consecutive MVP. I think this last stretch of the NBA season, Embiid did everything he needed to do to solidify himself as the most dominant big man in basketball. Even if he doesn't win the MVP, he's still the most dominant big man in basketball. But I'm going to take him over Jokic. And honestly, I don't see any reason why Jokic should even come in second. Giannis should probably come in second in MVP voting. I just don't think the award should go to Jokic. So my pick is going to be Joel Embiid, and that's it. Embiid finally gets his award. Maybe this takes a weight off his shoulder and he's able to play with more fun. And he doesn't have to play with that chip on his shoulder in the playoffs, and Philly goes even further than maybe expected. Rookie of the year, I think this is pretty unanimous. Paolo Banchero on the Magic. He has been incredible for them. The Magic have actually been a fun team to watch most of the time in this season. Jalen Williams on OKC, really good. Just not playing enough minutes when Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. His stats without Shea Gilgeous-Alexander are incredible. But when Shea is on the court, it's Shea's game. It's his time. He's the man. So Jalen Williams kind of takes a back seat. Walker Kessler, Benedict Mathurin are some other names that I see being thrown around here. I'm going with Paolo Banchero. I think everyone else probably is too. Defensive player of the year. This one's a bit iffy. I don't know. A lot of people have Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm not really sure who else. There was a big campaign for Jaren Jackson Jr. in the middle of the year, beginning of the year, to win this award. He is the betting favorite at minus 145. Brooke Lopez is the next closest at plus 110, and then you got long shots like Bam Adebayo, Giannis, and Evan Mobley are all plus 5,000 odds. AD's 10,000. Like, you're just getting into crazy territory here. So it's most likely going to go to Jaren Jackson Jr., which is fine. I'm not really going to argue that. It is what it is. Sixth man of the year. My pick is for Emmanuel Quickley. Malcolm Brogdon is a tough contender, and I would say he might even be the front runner, but I think Emmanuel Quickley could get the nod here for Sixth Man of the Year. I think Brogdon's the favorite, but I would love to see it go to Emmanuel quickly. Most improved player, you got a lot. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a big one. Jalen Brunson, obviously, is a big one. Like, Jalen Brunson had a good year last year with the Mavs, and then he really popped off with the playoffs. But what he did this year with the Knicks, I don't think him getting that contract from New York, I don't think anyone expected him to play as well as he has this year. I really don't. So he can play. He can win, I should say, most improved player. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, another one who just took an astronomical leap this year from being a good player to a great player. But I don't like John Morant won most improved player last year. That's not what this award is about. You know, John Morant won rookie of the year and then he won most improved player. How does that work? He won rookie of the year. Everyone had high hopes for him. How could you possibly give him most improved player? That's kind of like a slight. That's not cool. That's not a good thing to do. So someone like Lauri Markkanen should be in heavily consideration because he almost was dead in the water in Chicago. Like, it just was not working out for him there. Couldn't really do much of anything. And then he comes to Utah, and he is the number one offensive threat on their team and putting up, you know, 25-plus points a night. Easy. So Lauri Markkanen probably has the edge here over guys that are more considered, I think, higher caliber of players than him, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Brunson. I would like Jalen Brunson to win the award, obviously, because he's a Knick. And like I said, I think he did get a fat contract. So someone getting a fat contract, you're not paying him to be the most improved player. You know, you're paying him to perform. So he performed. I think he outperformed people's expectations. But that, nonetheless, I think people had decently high expectations for him. Lauri Markkanen, I don't think anyone expected anything at all from him. And he popped off in Utah. So for that reason, he'll probably get the nod for this award, which I have no problems with. Most clutch player of the year. Now, I don't really know how this, they have a league where it's, or a stat where it's most points in the clutch, where I think that's like under 2 minutes left in the game within a one or two possession game. I don't exactly know what the qualifications are for a quote-unquote clutch basket, but Fox had a league leading 194 points in the clutch. That's 35 clear of second place. And this is according to the Bleacher Report. He's also shooting 52.9% from the field and averaging 5.7 assists per 100 clutch possessions. Yeah, his Sacramento Kings are plus 6.9 points per 100 clutch possessions. A lot of words. A lot of words for an award that was just fabricated from absolutely nothing this year, just so more people can have accolades, I guess. I don't know. It's one of these silly awards that they made up. But, hey, De'Aaron Fox is my guy, so give him the award. I don't really care about that. And then I think the unanimous coach of the year here has to be Mike Brown as well. Speaking of the Sacramento Kings, because this always happens, obviously. If a team goes on, that has a drought in the playoffs or has just been bad in the playoffs, gets a coach, and now suddenly that team is great or at least good and makes the playoffs, they're winning coach of the year. It happened with Tom Thibodeau in the Knicks a couple years ago. And now this year with the Sacramento Kings, they snapped the longest postseason drought that was currently active heading into this year. 16 years without a postseason berth in Sacramento, and they won their division. They came comfortably in third place in the Western Conference. They had one of the most efficient offenses. It might be the most efficient offense in all of basketball this year. Mike Brown was the missing piece there for the Sacramento Kings. Sabonis, Fox, hey, Domantas Sabonis for most improved player. How about that too? Hey, throw his name into that maybe. But yeah, it was a fantastic year for the Sacramento Kings. They seem to have finally figured it out as a franchise. Mike Brown, coach of the year. I don't think it should even be close. And executive of the year, whatever. Whoever is, I don't know. don't even care. I don't know. Danny Ainge fleeced. He got a haul for Donovan Mitchell, and he got a haul for Rudy Gobert. Maybe Danny Ainge. Maybe the who's the executive for the Cavs? What's his name? Kobe Altman. Maybe, because they got Donovan Mitchell, and now the Cavs were the four seed. That's a possibility, too. Don't really put too much stock in executive of the year. That's not what I'm focused on. I'm focused on the on-the-court accolades. But, yeah, those are my picks for NBA awards for the 2023 season. Very much looking forward to the play-in game. Again, I have for Tuesday, I have the Heat beating the Hawks and the Lakers beating the Timberwolves. And then Wednesday, I have the Pelicans beating the Thunder and the Raptors beating the Bulls. And then I have the Lakers. No, then I have the Pelicans beating the Timberwolves and then the Raptors beating the Hawks. That's how I think it's going to play out. We'll see if I'm right or not after this weekend or after Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Friday, we got the eighth seed game. Then the playoffs start Saturday. Very exciting stuff. So that'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Enjoy the rest of the week. And I'll see you all next Tuesday. Hey. Yeah. Penny X. I need someone to be patient with me. Someone to get money when I take it from me. They don't even need to be as famous as me. I don't think I meet them at the places I be. But deep down I think about you all day, mommy. I know I'm a pit bull, but dolly, mommy. I just wanna take you on a holiday, mommy. Say what's on your mind, I'ma call away, mommy. Come and rescue me. Take me out the club, take me out the trap. Take me off the market, take me off the map. I'm trying to hit